This is the audio that accompanies Thomas versus Primus, which is the first servitude case in the series of servitude cases that we'll be talking about. Initially, we'll be talking about this concept of easements. So if you look at the first slide that accompanies Thomas versus Primus, you can see at the basics what we're thinking about when we talk about a servitude. We've been slicing property rights, particularly property rights in real property, in a number of different ways. And here we're going to talk about someone having a property right in somebody else's property, but not the full property, like a estate, like a fee simple or something like that, or even a future interest. Not even some kind of temporal relationship where maybe I'm a tenant to a landlord. Here we're going to have a real property right that's not as big as kind of absolute possessory rights, but an error right that's defined in some way where, hence the name called a servitude, one land serves the other. So for this example, land B has a right of way on it that the person who owns land A can use to reach the beach. These are very common easements. And here, B would be serving A, and that right of way, that property right, would be called a servitude. So if you go to slide 2, here's another example of a servitude. Here we've got an easement as well, and the easement might allow Sonny to tell Debbie to take those trees down. Right? Why? Because those trees are blocking Sonny's natural light. And here Sonny actually wants that natural light because of those solar panels on top of his house. And again, what land is serving what, right? Debbie's land is serving Sonny's land, and so we have a servitude. Actually, we'll see once we start defining some terminology here that the first on slide 1 would be an affirmative easement, and the easement on slide 2 would be called a negative easement. And if we go to slide 3, this is what we've been doing when we've been going to every new area of property law, is identifying and learning new terminology. And so here's some new terminology when we're dealing with easements. Now, easements are a type of servitude. So we can think of servitude as a broader genus, and easements are a type of servitude, a species of servitude. And when we're thinking about an easement, we've got different kind of characteristics that define some of the legal aspects of the easement. The first is whether the easement is an affirmative or a negative easement. An affirmative easement is one in which the benefited property or individual, if this is in gross, gets to do something on the burden land. So the land that's serving the other land, somebody gets to do something over that land. And so if we go back to slide 1, this is a servitude that's an affirmative easement. Why? Because A gets to do something on B's land. She gets to use that right of way. A negative easement is one where the owner of the easement gets to prevent something from happening on the burdened land. This would be, go back to slide 2. Sonny can prevent Debbie from doing something. What can Sonny prevent Debbie from doing? He can prevent her from putting up or blocking his natural light or natural airway. Now, this might also result in an affirmative easement if Sonny gets to go on Debbie's land in some way. But most likely, this would be written up as just a negative easement. Sonny gets to prevent Debbie from doing something, putting those trees or letting those trees grow on her land. So an easement can be affirmative or negative, and we'll talk about this as we go through each one of the cases. The other thing that an easement can be is an easement can be appurtenant or in gross. And this is usually thought about on the benefit side. And that is the benefit appurtenant tied to the land, ownership of the land, or is it in gross? Is it tied to an individual? If we go back to slide 1 and we think about this affirmative easement, it could be appurtenant. That is, it's the owner of land A that gets to go across that right-of-way of B's land to the beach. And so this would be an appurtenant affirmative easement. This could also be an in gross affirmative easement if it turns out it's not about the owner of land A. It's that there are certain individuals that themselves can do something on the burdened land. So this would be, say, an individual that has a right-of-way across B's land. That would be an in-gross easement. And then finally, in our definitional kind of new terminology section, we look at this idea of whether the easement is and who is dominant and who's servient.
This is where we get our servitude terminology. So if we go back to slide one, the dominant property is property A. The servient property is property B. Go to slide two, Sunny is the dominant property. Debbie is the servient property. It's a way for us to identify those things. So if we go to slide four, we find out the kind of most basic way to create an easement, and that's expressly, in writing, meeting the statute of frauds. This is the most common way for someone to create an easement. Here's an example of an easement. It's actually an example of an easement from a case that the casebook talks about a little bit, Willard versus First Church. And here, let's say A sells a parcel to B. And in that sale, it might say to A sells to B in fee simple, or B and her heirs, or B and their heirs, so creating a fee simple. And then we've got this extra terminology, which would not be interpreted as a fee simple determinable, because we're not actually conditioning ownership of the fee simple on some kind of condition or durational language. We're actually going to also create an easement. Subject to an easement for automobile parking during church hours for the benefit of the church on the property at the southwest corner of the intersection of Hilton Way and Francisco Boulevard, such easement to run with the land only so long as property for whose benefit the easement is given is used for church purposes. So a couple things here. One, this meets our easement by writing. We're putting it in writing. The other thing that's happening, if you take a look at this, is it's going beyond just merely a contractual relationship between A and B. For example, let's say B turns around and sells the property to C. If this was just a contract between A and B, when B sold the property to C, C wouldn't be subject to any of these restrictions. That was a deal you made with B, not with me. I'm C. Kind of rhymed, didn't it? The reason we want to create a property right is we want to make sure if I'm A and I'm selling to B, and it looks like here A really wants to make sure that that parking lot can be used for church purposes, that even if B turns around and sells the land, B only can sell what she has. And what she has might be a fee simple, but it's a fee simple subject to this property right, an easement, a type of servitude. And here we see this expressly in the easement language, the easement to run with the land, right? There's a connection, though, here, right? Run with the land only so long as a property for whose benefit the easement is given is used for church purposes, right? Kind of further putting into effect this idea that that's what the easement is supposed to be for. And so if we look at these and we look at this kind of language here, we're creating an easement by writing, meeting our statute of frauds. And one of the big questions that comes up initially when we look at this idea of creation of easements is whether the easement being created, if I can create the benefit in a third party, right? So if we're looking at this one, we'd say, okay, we're supposed to allow people to park there during church hours. This looks like an affirmative easement, allowing somebody else to do something on this property. Is it appurtenant or engross? This depends on how we interpret the easement. We could think about it being appurtenant, meaning that it's all about this property on the southwest corner of Hilton Way and Francisco Boulevard, and the church that owns that property gets to use the parking lot across the street. Or maybe it's engross, and we're just using that language to identify this church, right? And the church is the one that gets to do something on the burden property. But the one thing that is clear is the church, who's getting the benefit of this, isn't a party to the actual transfer of the easement. And in the old days, we got really concerned about creating property rights in someone who was not part of the transaction. And so here, many jurisdictions wouldn't even allow this easement to be enforceable because they'd say, look, it was for the benefit of a third party and they're not there or part of the transaction. And so what you had to do in those jurisdictions is use our straw person, which we've talked about before in other instances, transfer the parcel to the straw person. The straw person would then transfer the burden to the burden property owner, the benefit to the benefited property owner. Or we would end up transferring it to the church, and then the church would transfer it to whoever was getting that parking lot that the church was going to be able to park on during church hours. Nowadays, a lot of jurisdictions, not all, but a lot of jurisdictions allow you to easily create an easement to the benefit of a third party. And finally, on this slide, we talk about classifying the easement. We already did that a little bit, right? We classified this easement in a sense that it's an affirmative easement. Looks like it's probably appurtenant because we're looking at a church that's located on a specific piece of property. It would be engross if we interpreted this to be a church regardless of where it was located. The benefit's being thrown into a third party, which means that if a jurisdiction required an actual transfer of land to that third party and that third party to be part of the transaction, I'd have to use a straw person or use the church as part of the transaction. Other jurisdictions wouldn't require that. If we move on to slide five, we find out, okay, fine, easement in writing, that's fine.
easy way to do it. It's the way most people should do it. It's the way most easements are created. Not a lot of interesting stuff there. We're now going to start looking at a series of cases, starting with Thomas versus Primus, where, okay, fine, we don't have it in writing, but we're going to see whether we can somehow create the easement in some other way. And there are going to be a series of different ways courts will look at creating an easement. And the first one I want to look at is an implied easement. And here are the ideas that you can imply easement in two ways. We can imply an easement by existing use, and a lot of times people will call this an easement by implication. Or we could imply an easement by necessity. Sometimes courts would see this not even as a concept of an implied easement. They would look at it as a completely different category of easement, an easement by necessity. We're going to talk about these the way the Thomas versus Primus case talks about it, but you're going to see variance in jurisdictions where some will see an easement by implication and easement by necessity as two separate things. Some will see an easement by necessity as a type of easement by implication. The one thing that happens with these in general, there's going to be a little bit of a carve out for easement by necessity, is that typically these arise out of a land transaction. That is, we are going to imply them, hence the name implied easement, we are going to imply them into a specific transaction and assume that the easement was created as part of that transaction and look for certain things to see whether we're comfortable saying that this thing has been implied properly in those particular cases. And that means we're going to turn to the Thomas versus Primus case, but I'm going to go ahead and split this file up to make sure we keep ourselves with these nice bite-sized bits of MP3 files.